morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 19, entitled King Prithu's 100 Horse Sacrifices. Text number 28. Translation: Dear King, Indra's powers are already reduced due to his attempt to impede the execution of your sacrifice. We shall call him by Vedic mantras, which were never before used, and certainly he will come. Thus, by the power of our mantra, we shall cast him into the fire, because he is your enemy. Purport: By chanting the Vedic mantras properly in a sacrifice, one can perform many wonderful things. In Kali Yuga, however, there are no qualified Brahmins who can chant the mantras properly. Consequently, no attempt should be made to perform such big sacrifices. In this age, the only sacrifice recommended is the Sankirtan movement. So in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear how Indra, due to his offense of attempting to steal the sacrificial horse from a Vedic sacrifice performed by Prithu Maharaj, he lost, it says here, reduced or lost his material and spiritual powers. As we discussed last week, the Lord often empowers his devotees for important services. Now, the demigods are all devotees of the Lord. Granted, they may not be the highest example of devotional service, like the residents of Vrindavan or the gopis in particular, but they are very elevated souls. And we have to be careful not to offend the devatas. We don't condone demigod worship. At the same time, we should not decry the demigods and their important services to the Lord. They're part of his administration. They are empowered with special potencies in their management of the affairs of this universe. We hear how Brahma creates, Shiva destroys, Indra, he sends forth rain. Vayu's in charge of the wind. Varuna's in charge of the ocean surrounding Australia. These things are not going on by chance, as modern science would have us believe. Prabhupada once said that behind every energy is an energetic. It's an important thing to remember. Behind every energy is an energetic. Just like, for example, in this room we have light, various types of lights, bright yellow lights on the deity and white lights on the sides of the walls hidden by some small curtains, chandelier over Srila Prabhupada, there's light. But it can all be traced back to a power station, for want of a better word, a power station. And obviously at the power station there's a person at the control. So there's an analogy of behind every energy there's an energetic. And logically we can conclude there are so many energies in this world. Unlimited various types of energy. And the same thing holds true. Behind every energy is an energetic. So who's the energetic behind all the energies of this world? Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Nadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Sarva Karana Karanam. He's the cause of all causes. In the same way, he because he's engaged in his loving pastimes in the spiritual world, doesn't want to be so much bothered with the affairs of this world. This is where the souls who turn away from him come, and he kindly gives them the playground of material existence. But Prabhupada said the Lord never personally comes in touch with the material energy. He does so through his agencies. Even to impregnate the living entities into this material world, he does that through the potency of Shiva. It's said that Shiva is the glance of the Lord. The glance of the Lord personified is Shiva, which means all auspicious. And through the glance of Shiva, the Lord impregnates the living entities into the womb of material nature so they can go on with their affairs or whatever they want to do in this material cosmos. So everything has to be managed. All these souls have dropped down into the material world with the ultimate purpose, hopefully, of after millions of lives in this material world, waking up, wake up, wake up, go back. So the whole thing has to be managed until they come to their senses. So who does the management? It's the devatas. What does the management mean? It means that the things have to be managed. The sun, the light, the rain, the wind, the water at Bondi Beach, must all be arranged under someone's control. And if it wasn't arranged, it'd be a big mess. Just like here in our temple, we have our Varanayaka. Now, it's a difficult position because you have to manage the material energy. Managing the material energy is a headache. I know, I was temple president on several occasions. I didn't have the best reputation as a manager of New Mayapur. We had a lot of fun, but we ran into debt. Durban, South Africa. I know that you're dealing with material affairs and spiritual affairs, of course, but somebody has to take the headache of, you know, having the planning sessions and then executing it and following it up. And some devotees have that ability. So just imagine if Vara didn't have his committee meetings and his deity department meetings and his Sangatan meetings and meetings. That's what it means to be a manager. Meetings. Things would not go smoothly. So the devatas, simply put, they manage the bigger picture, the universe. It couldn't be going on unless there was somebody managing it. If someone's not managing material energy, it just, well, becomes a mess. Now to do the service here, Vara needs the blessings of Bhakti Vijayapurna Maharaj and Srila Prabhupada and the AGM and the GBC and ABC. He needs the blessings to do that particular service. It's not an easy. We do these things by kripa, by mercy, because otherwise it's impossible. We're not only managing material things, we're managing the spiritual lives of many devotees. Prabhupada said one time, the first duty of the GBC is to make sure that the people in his charge are chanting 16 rounds a day and following the four legative principles. Not that we just go to managerial school and therefore we become qualified to be a temple president, a regional secretary, a GBC, or anything like that. No, it takes great spiritual acumen. It takes great spiritual strength. And where does our strength come from? Krishna says, I am the strength of the strong, devoid of passion. So a devotee gets blessed to do these services. So imagine if this service, if managing a temple or a region takes expertise and blessings, imagine managing the universal affairs. Where do they get that? They're jivatmas just like you and me. We can say that theoretically. They're just like you and me. These demigods are posts. These are not eternal positions. They're posts. They're jobs. You get hired. You do it for a while. And then, depending on how you do it, you go up or down. But where do they get the power? They're jivas. Where do they get the power? They get the power from Krishna. They're dependent on him for everything. He is the source of their existence, their maintenance, and their dissolution. Name vidu sura gana prabhavam namaharshaya ahamadir idhevanam maharshinam chasaurvashaha. Very nice verse. Neither the hosts of demigods nor the great sages know my origin. For in every respect, Krishna says, I am the source of both the demigods and the sages. But, or we should consider, it doesn't have to be a but we can consider, that just as the Lord empowers his devotees, he can take those powers away. In the Bible it's stated, the Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away. Why would the Lord take away any or all of power invested in his devotee? After so many millions of lifetimes, one wakes up, surrenders, becomes a devotee, goes through so many days and weeks and months and years, and perhaps in most cases lifetimes. Vasudeva sarvameti sa mahatma sudurlabha. It's very rare that after many, many lifetimes, one who's in full consciousness for me surrenders to me. Why is it after such, the Lord investing so much time and energy, inspiration into a bhakta and empowering, why would he take that power away? You train someone in your business with the intention that that person is going to perform for many years to come. Some women are engaged in business affairs, and the company sees, oh, they're very expert at what they're doing. Let's take them out of that job, send them back to school, invest 2-4 years, and they'll come back and take a higher position in the company. I know one of my friends, a disciple of Radhanath Swami, Yashoda Dulal, he works for American Express in America. And he was doing well, but they sent him to school for years so that he could come back and be at even higher priority job. So you don't do that and then think, oh, the guy's going to leave. You do that because you thought, oh, this is a solid man. This investing this education in this man or this woman is a good investment. So how is it that sometimes we see that devotees of the caliber of the demigods, they're invested with powers and the Lord giveth and then he taketh away? Well, the reason's very simple, because the devotee has misused, or even probably in some cases abused. Misused is a strong, but abused, that's a very strong term. You misuse your authority, but if you abuse your authority, this is like a grievous sin. There's some sin. Yeah, you do you're a little naughty, but a grievous sin, then this is something serious. Prabhupada said that you can make mistakes once, you're forgiven, twice, you're forgiven, but three times, Prabhupada said, is a sign that you're not sincere. Of course, we may have to increase that quote a little bit in Kali Yuga, but the idea is that there are grievous sins. Grievous sins. And in such a case, the Lord will disempower a devotee. Indra created a grievous sin because if a layman commits a sin, it's okay. But if those in charge or those who have responsibility commit a sin, this is something different. This is something different. It's taken more seriously. So Indra, he has a very important responsibility. Without the rain, then there won't be grains. And without the grains, we can't perform the yajnas, the sacrifices to please Vishnu for material and spiritual prosperity. What to speak of having chapatis and rice and dal and so many things. Fodder to feed the cows and the bulls. And so Indra is a very responsible personality. But he became irresponsible. He committed a grievous sin. He stole the sacrificial horse from the sacrifice of Maharaj Prithu. Why did he do that? He's nicely situated. What does he have to worry about anything? He's got Shvargalok. And plus, he has devotional service. You couldn't think of executing. Of course, we don't necessarily try to arrange that. But gosh, sometimes you live in a palace and sometimes you live in the forest. What if you live in the palace all the time? You're not going to complain. You live over, sometimes you live in places where you get bitten by bed bugs. So Sometimes you live in places where, you know, but if you can live in a palace all the time. So Indra's got the best of both worlds. Like Prabhupada wrote a posthumous letter to Jayananda Prabhu and said, so if you left this world with any tinge of material desire, if there, you know, you're a bhakta, but you know, cheto darpan and marjatam, you just scrub, 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 and if you hadn't finished scrubbing the heart of lust and anger and greed, then you have taken birth on the higher planets, where in that situation you can continue with your devotional service and go back home, back to Godhead. So if a devotee doesn't make it, if he still has some desires of this world, lust, then you go. And there's apsaras. There's no... The rules and regulations are different up there. The girls are society girls. They're like prostitutes, but it's not... It's different there. The angels, it's just... We won't go into the detail, but it's not the same rules that apply up there. And there one enjoys, and then when that nice situation goes, the Prabhupada said to Jayananda, but because you were hearing the Maha Mantra at the moment of death, I say you've gone to Krishna Loka. All glories to the holy names, our saviors. So, why would he throw away such an opportunity? Because he has that little bit of pratishta, a lot of pratishta in the heart. What is pratishta? Na dhanam na janam na sundarim kavicham va jagadisha kumaye mama janmani janmani ishvare bhavatad bhakti ahaitakitvai. Mahaprabhu warns us. He's taking us from shraddha to prema with the shikshastakam verses. Na dhanam na janam na sundarim. Lord, I have no desire in your service to accumulate wealth, to enjoy the opposite sex, to have any number of followers of mine, which means, like Prabhupada translated, as desire for name and fame. So he has this big position, Indra, and his weakness, his Achilles heel, is this attachment to this big position. And when he saw Maharaj Prithu performing this, what particular type of sacrifice was he?
Ashwamedha,
where you sacrifice the horse. 100 horses. Then by doing that, on a certain amount of times, 100 or 1,000 times, then you can attain the post of Indra. So Indra's thinking, this guy, it's not a Shaktavasha avatar, but he's thinking like that. He's doing this yagya so nicely that he's going to get my job. Everybody worries about that, especially now in the time of recession. We may become redundant. It means that they move the job or somebody else takes over the job. We're all worrying now, I'm going to lose my job. Again, because Indra's a post. It's not an eternal person, Indra. You might have been Indra one time. You might have been Brahma in some creation. At the time of creation, the most pious person in the universe becomes Brahma. And then other pious souls assume the roles of various demigods. To become Indra, one has to perform hundreds of such aswamedha, or thousands, or hundreds of thousands of such aswamedha yagyas. He has to distribute unlimited, have distributed unlimited charity to the brahmanas, dug so many wells, established so many roads, etc., etc. Punya, pious activity. But in the material world, there's always somebody better than you. There's always somebody a little bit better. If you're the best athlete, somebody will come along who will better you. You have to be prepared for that. In the material world, you know, there's one gold medal at the event, and then a silver, and then a bronze. It's always like that. And then next year, somebody else gets. But in Krishna consciousness, because every step is auspicious, going back home, back to Godhead, everyone's a winner, every day. Param vijayate shri Krishna shankirtan. Let there be all victory for the chanting of the holy names. We're always victorious. We're chanting our rounds every day and serving the holy name through our various propensities, raising children in Krishna consciousness, going out to distributive books, managing temples. It's all part of the complete whole Sankirtan, the complete Kirtan of the holy name. Sam means complete. Then we're successful. Param vidyate shri Krishna Sankirtan. Let there be all victory by chanting. spread by chanting and by spreading the chanting. But in the material world, there's always somebody better than you. So Indra is afraid of losing his cushy throne. Therefore, when he sees a yogi, a jogi, as they say, Prabhupada say in Bengali, jogi, when he sees a jogi, very successful at his tapas, his penance and austerity, and his mystery, he gets a little bit nervous, and often he'll send an apsara down, a heavenly prostitute, to tempt him. And these are no ordinary girls. They're empowered with the feminine shakti. Very much empowered. And these great sages, though they're very renounced, not only just renounced, but renounced with vigyan, with realization, they're sometimes no match for some of these heavenly girls. I think one of them's name is Urvashi. Urvashi has been the downfall of many a sage. So in the same way, Indra was worried about Prithi Maharaj, so he didn't have to be worried. Devotees shouldn't be envious of another devotee's position. He should think, oh, let me become sincere like that Vaishnava and get the same mercy of Krishna. He doesn't think, oh, I'm envious. No. He's appreciative, and he thinks, oh, that devotee's done so well. He's received Krishna's mercy. Let me go towards that devotee, touch his feet, and inquire from him how to execute amala bhakti, pure devotional service. Me, I must be performing some kind of other devotional service, prakrita bhakta. My devotional service is mixed. His devotional service is not so mixed, or maybe it's pure. Let me go and touch his feet, because Vaishnavas are very compassionate. They always want to share the good fortune with others. Prabhupada said the duty of a first-class man is to make a fifth-class man also a first-class man. So really, devotees, reflecting on their good fortune, spend the rest of their lives, once they become devotees, simply uplifting all of humanity. That is their pleasure. Pastimes. But not Indra. He had this black seed in his heart, and he was envious, and so he got the danda. There's different ways that you can bring someone to the proper conclusion. There's different types of diplomacy, because you have to lose a little diplomacy, even sometimes in dealing with the student, or the citizens, or even the disciples. Some little diplomacy may be required. You can't just be straightforward, because you're not dealing with someone who is straightforward. You're still harboring material desires. So, what you do is you offer a gift. You tell the child, I'll give you a burfi if you do this. Oh, okay, I'll do it. And if next time I do it, you also give me a burfi? Yes. That. Or you offer the minister a gift. Or you offer... you offer a position. And if nothing else works, well, I think there's sweet words, gift, position, and then argumentum ad baculum. Okay, you're not cooperating? The danda. Like we think of the tree danda. We think of the danda in relationship to the sannyasi, but Krishna doesn't refer to the tridandi or the ekadanda of the sannyasa orders in the Bhagavad Gita when he speaks about being the rod of chastisement. It's not that he's borrowing someone's danda and hitting someone on the head. He's just talking about the danda, the stick of wood carved from the tree to knock somebody on the head and bring them to their senses. Sometimes the Lord has to deal in this way. It's called the school of hard knocks. We're all going through it. To a greater or lesser degree. So sometimes the Lord has to punish even his devotee. Spare the rod, spoil the child. Of course, we'll never receive any punishment which Krishna feels is just too much. We have that phrase in Krishna consciousness. Too much, Prabhu. Even in French, when I was in France for so many years, the French devotees would adopt some English words. Prabhu, ça c'est too much. And we'd be out on the street, and somebody would say to a karmi, ça c'est too much. And the qu'est-ce que vous dites? What do you say? Ça too much. The Lord never gives too much. Whatever we're undergoing, the Lord knows that's exactly what we need. Even though we may not understand, we have some disease or something. It's all Krishna's plan. We just have to be serene. He knows best. We have to have that faith. If you don't have that faith, you'll have trouble. You'll have doubts in Krishna consciousness. What is the verse? Those who have full faith in both the Spirit. Yasya devi para bhaktir yatta devi tatha guru. Those who have full faith in the instructions of the spiritual master in Krishna, the full purport of Vedic knowledge is revealed. So, happiness or distress, heat or cold, devotee accepts them all as the mercy of the Lord. All a lesson. The school of life. So, this Indra, because he was so responsible, he had to get a big danda. He got his powers removed. Not because we are devotees and dear to the Lord we can get away with nonsense. On the contrary, because we're devotees and representatives of the spiritual master and Krishna, we cannot do nonsense. Not because we're devotees we can get away with it. Because we are devotees, we can't get away with anything. Because we're always in the public eye. Or public eye. We're in the eye of the Vaishnava community, and we're in the eye of the greater community of the city or the country or the world and we live in. We live very much under the public eye. And as you grow and mature and accept more responsibility, this becomes even more so. When you become a guru sannyasi, you have no private life. Because everyone's looking to you to see how to do it. Even to brush your teeth. I don't know when you're alone. You're only alone when you're sleeping in your dreams. But even then, we're always somewhere with somebody. So devotees are in the public eye, and the Lord arranges that because he wants to make his devotees famous, not so the devotee can become attached and proud, but because whatever a great man does, the common man will follow in his footsteps, and whatever exemplary acts he performs, the whole world pursues. We're meant to show people the path out of darkness into light, out of the material world into the spiritual world, out of ignorance into knowledge, into vigyan. That's the whole reason we live here. It's the whole reason we exist. For others. We live for others. As the British Air Force. To fly. To serve. That is our motto also. To fly. To serve. So we have to remain pure. We have to remain the transparent Vaya medium. Let us say we have to attain that position. It would be ludicrous to think that we're on that level yet, but perhaps there's enough transparency that we can inspire others and lead others to a certain degree. But really, we want to become like Srila Prabhupada. One devotee said one time, "Srila Prabhupada, I want to be just like you." And one devotee sitting by, he said, "No, you can't. That's an offense to think you can become like the guru." And Prabhupada took it a different way. "Yes, thank you. You should become like me." In the sense that the spiritual master is an acharya, he teaches by example. We choose someone as our spiritual master because we're inspired by them, and we're inspired by their example. We want to follow in their footsteps in every detail, both practically and from how that devotee is serving Guru and Krishna from the heart. So everyone has someone who looks up to them. Even if one's just a dad, he's got some kids who look to him. If he's a husband, the wife actually looks to the husband as pati guru, as an inspiration in spiritual life, not just the bread maker, but someone who inspires them in their Krishna consciousness. We look to our leaders, our politicians, to ensure that dharma is intact and irreligion is cut down, as Prabhupada said in another verse in this chapter. And if we fall out of line, we have to expect that temporarily, or in some cases permanently, the Lord will take away the power invested. This is a sobering thought, because we enjoy our service. We enjoy our service, and we need the paraphernalia that we have to do the service. So the various transcendental qualities that we develop, Tatikshava, Karunika, Shuridam, Shravadehinam, Achata, Shatavashanta, Shadava, Shadabhushanaha. Shadava, Shadabhushana means that a devotee is embellished with many wonderful qualities. Take any devotee in this room, and just, we can speak, sometimes it's nice to do like this, take a devotee and speak about their good qualities instead of being fall down to the platform of fault finding, rather take that and analyze the good qualities of that devotee, then we'll find so many qualities. How one devotee is worth so many men in this material world. So it takes time. Again, it takes time. We've worked so hard to come to this goal. Even just being a kanista adhikari or a madhyam, what to speak of uttama, just to become a kanista. I said the other day in the public lecture, if you're drowning in the ocean and someone lifts you just 1 inch above the ocean, you're saved. You may not be, you know, in the helicopter going back to the land, but hey, it's a good thing. Saved. So wherever we're at, we are the recipients of unlimited mercy. And we don't want to lose it. We don't want to lose it. We don't want to lose it. We have to be very careful, like the razor's edge. You shave. I was shaving the other day, and I heard a noise. I turned, and I cut my lip, and I had to find one of those things that you, the stick that you put that cuts, that stops the bleeding. I was looking all over my bag, bleeding. Finally, I found it. Spiritual life can be like that. That's the danger. Children are more susceptible to accidents than older people, because they're just naive. And we are children, we are infants in spiritual life, so we are more apt to make mistakes. Therefore, we have to really take shelter in Hari, Guru, and Vaishnava. They have to protect us. And they protect us in the sense that we follow their instructions, we're safe. But if we deviate from gross deviation, then the mercy may be withdrawn. One time Brahmananda Prabhu told me the story that he acted very inappropriately. He didn't tell me exactly what it was, but he said it was not nice what he did. Something offensive. And Prabhupada was so angry at him. Prabhupada was so angry. Prabhupada would become angry. His lips would tremble. Like that. He became so angry. He said, "Brahmananda, you are such a nonsense. You are such a rascal. I'm withdrawing all my mercy from you." Can you imagine if your spiritual master said that? "I'm withdrawing all my mercy. I am no longer responsible. You're on your own." Like you're out in space and you're connected to this, to the spaceship, to the satellite out there, and by the tether to the space module, and somehow it gets cut. What is your fate? You become a satellite of sorts. You become there's a lot of garbage orbiting the Earth right now, just because space vehicles explode, or they run dry, or they're out of, they can't, the energy, they can't go on. They're just a lot of Sputnik satellites floating. It's like people are worried about it, our environment. Like, imagine if you become part of the debris. Circulating the Earth. You're out into outer space, beyond gravity. Or you're in the ocean, the great ocean, and you fall overboard, and then the ship just keeps going. "Hey, yo!" Nobody, they're all partying on the ship, nobody hears you, and you just see the lights of the cruise ship going off, and you're in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean between, New York and London. Oh my God. It happens. But worse yet is to be connected to the Guru Parampara and to commit such a grievous offense that your spiritual master would say, "I'm withdrawing my mercy." So Brahmananda told me, he just fell to his knees. He actually fell on the ground, began crying, sobbing like a baby. "No, Prabhupada, no, 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 please, please." Crying, real tears, not crocodile tears. Real tears, "No, no, no, no." Prabhupada said, "All right, I forgive you, but don't do it again." Like that. And there are other examples as well. There's examples of very elevated personalities who apparently make a deviation so that we can be instructed. Chodharidas, he was a sannyasi. Chota means like little Haridas. There was Haridas Thakur, Namacharya, and there was Chota Haridas. But he was no little personality. He was a very dear associate. He got the danda from Mahaprabhu or one of Mahaprabhu's associates. I don't know the history. But he was a sannyasi in the camp of Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And in those times, strict times in Vedic culture 500 years ago, he gave rice to an old Bengali woman. And that was not allowed for one in the renounced order of life. That was considered a discrepancy. So Mahaprabhu withdrew his mercy. He refused to even see him again. Of course, the Lord never fully abandons one who has served him sincerely. We have to remember that. Just as it's said that a woman and an elephant never forget an offense which may be committed to them, Chanakapanda says in Niti Shastra, logic, so the Lord never forgets any service rendered to him. He's more inclined to remember the service and the fault in the long run, just like Lord Chaitanya. We hear he doesn't accept offenses, he only accepts service. But of course, if we commit offenses to Lord Chaitanya, then there will definitely be some reaction, because the devotees will be displeased. So he withdrew his mercy from Chota Haridas, and being completely devastated, he just gave up his life. He considered just giving up. He considered the pain of suicide to be less than the pain of having to live without Mahaprabhu's mercy. And to die is no easy thing, even for a transcendentalist. To separate the soul from the body, we cannot even imagine what that's like. We had to be really prepared for that. To separate the soul from the body. You separate some of the possessions of the body from the body, we get upset. To separate from the body. So he willingly, in those days it was considered that the right thing to do was to just give up your body. So he did it. He went to the Sangam of the Jamuna, the Ganges, and the Saraswati. He gave up his life there. Not to be imitated. Other ways to deal with a fall down. One sannyasi did that, and Prabhupada said, no, that's not good. He was avoiding service. Later he said that sannyasi was nicely situated. But these are different things. So Chota Haridas, he purposely gave up his body, and then he became an invisible angel, a Gandharva. There's a picture in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and he was singing. Oh, it's here. Is that the original? So here we see Chota Haridas. So it's not that the Lord abandons his devotee. He'll never abandon him. The Lord also apparently rejected Mukunda. It's not Mukunda Dutt, is it? Just a devotee called Mukunda. Mukunda for attending some lectures on impersonalism. Why he was doing that, that's not said. We also attended some lectures of the impersonalists at the Parliament of World Religions. I hope Lord Chaitanya doesn't reject us. We did so with the intentions of networking, you know, making friends in the greater community of spiritualists and so forth and so on. We know that the purpose that we have our interfaith part of our society. But in that case, Mahaprabhu rejected him also. He wouldn't even allow him to come see him. But when the devotees pleaded, please, no, Mukunda's a good devotee, please, please, Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu said, I will not see him in 1,000 births. Mukunda took that in a positive way. He said, oh, that means after 1,000 births he'll see me. The Lord said, I will not see him for 1,000 births, meaning a long time. But Mukunda started dancing in ecstasy. Oh, it's guaranteed. I'm going to see Krishna in 1,000 births. Whoa, Mahaprabhu. And he began dancing. And Dorothy, like, whoa. So he's got a lot of faith. Well, that's very nice, but none of us want to wait 1,000 births to see the Lord because of some discrepancy in our practice. That's why the pastimes are there as a warning. These are warnings. There's so many warnings. Just like you're driving down the road. There's so many warnings. If you're a good driver, you read the signs. If you're not a good driver, you just drive. Duh. The signs are there to help you arrive safely. You know, there's a sign, a circular sign, triangle sign. They have, you know, different It's like that. So you slow down, you speed up, you turn, you know, like that. Signs are there. So these the lives of these devotees who I've been mentioning, they're great souls, but they humbly accept that pastime to instruct us. No, we don't want to take 1,000 births. We want to go back home, back to Godhead immediately. One time a devotee said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, I want to come back and distribute your books life after life." What? I said, "What? What am I teaching you? You're not listening?" That's a nice sentiment on behalf of the disciple, but Prabhupada said, "You should want to get back to Godhead quickly because this is Kali Yuga. Things don't get better, they only get worse." We're always talking, "Wow, it's changed so much, it's become so degraded." Hey, don't be surprised. Prabhupada said one time, "Don't be surprised if things go wrong." He said, "Be surprised if things go right in this world." So we want to exit. Exodus. So there's a few minutes left. We may want to discuss how it is after getting this opportunity of this rare dhurlabham, rare opportunity of pure devotional service, because we may not be pure devotees, but we are practicing pure devotional service. We're on the path of pure devotion. So there, we say like that. After getting this opportunity of pure devotionals, how can we foolishly make a mistake, a grievous mistake, and give it up? There's different reasons. We may lose our appreciation of Krishna consciousness and again become attracted to the material world because of some offense. It may happen because of an offense. We talk a lot about offenses. I think every day in most temples, before we start the day, we repeat the 10 offenses to the Holy. Every day we do that. Because these offenses are something that we have. Rules and regulations means things you do, things you don't do. It's not just rules. There's also regulations. Rules means the don't, and regulation means the do. So there's rules and regulations. So we talk about the positive. We also have to talk about the negative, because there's also the negative in us. It's the devil who made me do it, somebody will say. The devil, he's inside. So we have to discuss the offenses from time to time. Sometimes it's the offenses that cause us to forget our good fortune and make a more grievous mistake. Just like Akura. Akura was a devotee. He was, you could say, a covered devotee in the sense that he was working in the ministry of Kamsa. We have our deity ministry, and we have our this ministry and this guy. He worked in the ministry of Kamsa. And he was deputed by Kamsa to go to Vrindavan to get Krishna and Balaram. And he was such a realized devotee, such a bhakta, that he felt himself so fortunate that on the way to Vrindavan, he saw the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram. And seeing those feet, he developed ecstatic symptoms. "I'm going to see the Lord very soon." There's lots of footprints of Krishna all around Vrindavan, because the gopis, they just don't have the heart to erase the footprints of the Lord when they're sweeping the grounds of Vrindavan. They're in charge of sweeping and cleaning, and they come across a foot. They preserve it immortally, forever. So he saw the footprints, and he was in ecstasy. So you get to see what kind of devotee he was. But according to some Vaishnava authorities, Akura offended the gopis of Vrindavan by not consoling them when he took Krishna to Mathura. Some of our acharyas have commented like that. That Akura didn't, you know, when he was taking Krishna and Balaram in the chariot, and what were the gopis doing? They were feeling a type of separation before the separation. There's different types of vipralamba bhav. One is anticipating the separation. That's very difficult. As difficult as the separation. Anticipating the separation. So they had seen the Lord in the chariot, Krishna and Balaram, and they're falling down in front of the chariot, holding the horses, holding on to the wheels. And some acharyas say, because Akura did not console the gopis and explain what was happening, because of that offense, he was later forced to leave Dwarka and be separated from Krishna during the episode of the Simantaka jewel. At that time, Akura had to take up an ignoble residence in Varanasi and Benares. That's how the Acharyas explain it. So, this is something subtle. So we have to be very careful, because the level of our offenses is much more gross than that oversight of Akura. Our offenses are on the level of, you know, well, sometimes devotees fall prey to intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, offending another devotee. That's called the Hatimata offense, to offend someone who's dedicated their lives for preaching the glories of the Lord. It may be a minor offense, may be a grievous offense. So therefore, it sometimes slows down our progress, even to the point of lifetimes again. So if we're conscious of what the offenses are and we strive to avoid them, we can make progress. That's why Nectar Devotion is there's an entire chapter entitled Offenses to be Avoided. A whole chapter. There it discusses offenses to the holy name, seva aparat, offenses to the deities, offenses to the dham. And we should study these things. It's within our interest. And another reason we may foolishly leave our good fortune behind us is that we just take it all for granted. What do they say? Familiarity breeds contempt. Like a child who can't appreciate the priceless jewelry of his mother when he flushes it down the toilet or throws it in a mud puddle. As infants, we are all infants. Prabhupada said, I'm trying to become a Vaishnava. A Vaishnava is a very elevated thing. As infants, we sometimes cannot fathom even the slightest iota of our good fortune. But we have to try. We have to remind ourselves. One way to remember our good fortune is to regularly hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, like we're doing right now. In the association, we discuss these things. We separate the men from the boys, so to speak. We separate the milk from the water, like the swans do. We separate what is material from what is spiritual. We don't get them all mixed up in our cloudy mind or our neophyte state. We begin to appreciate what is this great good fortune that we have in Krishna consciousness. We have to remember from time to time. I often remember one devotee's reflection, one very nice girl in Krishna consciousness, a disciple of Shivaram Swami. One time she said in an offering to him, Guru Maharaj, it took you so long to find me. Please don't ever kick me away. And I remember one time my father gave me a very special gift. My father was very enamored by sailing ships. I sometimes think that he was probably a sailor in one of his previous lives. Actually, when he was a young man, he joined the U.S. Navy and he went to war. He fought on the USS Cabot in the South Seas against the Japanese. He had a scar on his face here, my father, from the kamikaze planes. You know, at the end of the war, the Japanese had the kamikaze planes. The pilot would crash the plane into the ship. So my father worked in an aircraft carrier. And the kamikazes attacked, and one of the kamikaze planes hit, and part of the wing came and sliced my father's face open. He had a big mark there. I was always very proud of him. Now my dad was in the war. Anyway, the point I was making was that he was infatuated by the sea and by ships at sea and the romance of sailing and so forth and so on. So he had many friends in that field and so forth and so on. One time he was gifted with a very special gift. He was given a lantern, which I heard was about 250 years old. It was a beautiful brass. The brass had become somewhat corroded because of the salt of the ocean, which made it even more priceless. And it was brass, and it had this red glass. It was like used as a warning lantern in times of emergency or something. I can't remember exactly what he told me, but it had a little compartment. You could open it up and put some kerosene in there, you know, a place to put some kerosene light. And so as a warning, the sailors in the storm, they would do like this, you know, with the lantern, wave it back and forth. Danger, and they say, in the distance you can see red, clearer than other colors like that, to the mist of the sea. There's this whole story he told me about it. But the one of the main things about it was that once some sailor of antiquity had taken rope, because there was a little latch on the top, and he'd, you know, the rope that you swing it with, he'd made that rope in a very intricate way with many ropes together. It was a very beautiful rope that he'd intricately woven. Obviously taken, my father said, it took him years, son. It was very beautiful. It was about this long. And just the whole way down, the way it was intricately woven, and my father said, no one can do like that anymore these days. I'm giving it to you, son. And I was like 14 or 15. I remember that. I said, where should I put it, Dad? He said, just hang it above your bed. So I hung it above my head, above my pillow, and I sometimes wake up at night and see this big, you know, metal thing, and I was always worried the rope would break because it was an old rope. It was very beautiful, intricately woven, and obviously it was very sturdy, but in my mind, I was thinking, you know, I'll be asleep, it'll fall on my head. So I thought, yeah. One day I went to the kitchen. I woke up and I went to the kitchen. I turned the lights on. I got a knife. I took it down. I cut that rope. The place where it was around the thing and up there, just to be sure. Cut it in two places. Threw it away. And then I took some rope that I had and I just tied it around and hung it like that. I said, that looks better. I remember my father came in the next morning to wake me because I was up in the night, so I was a little late. He came to wake me up and he saw that. He said, son, what have you done? I said, what? You cut the rope. He's some sailor, some seaman of yours, some old salt, he said. It took years sitting in his cabin weaving that. You just cut it with a knife. And he started crying. The only times I ever saw my father cry. He started crying. And that affected me very much. I felt so bad. My father said, you have to learn to appreciate the good things I've given you. And I had a very good relationship with my father. He was like my hero when I was young. So that, imbibing that, I also, I imbibed that in my relationship with my spiritual father. Like Prabhupada said of his father, Gomohan Day, he imbibed from him instructions and teaching which were later solidified by his eternal father. Om Vishnupad Paramahansa Pari Bhajikucharya Ushtotara Sata Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So in the same way, I imbibe that lesson that, you know, to always remember our good fortune and never act in such a way as to lose the mercy, to lose the powers that are invested of us for the important service that we have to Guru and Granga, because really the service is our life. It's our life and soul, our service. And we're very grateful to our beneficiaries, our spiritual masters, for investing us in the powers to execute that service. So let us always remember our good fortune and never deviate in any way, and rapidly make progress back home, back to Godhead. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Gaur Premanandi. Adhyay.